science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
The International Year of the Periodic Table, Alan.
I know. Who knew?
Well, who did know? But this, okay, I talked about it this morning on air, and something.
Really?
Yeah, well,
oh,
just to talk about the show, you know, I said this is what we're going to be talking about.
Good.
But something that came up was, well, shouldn't we be, who picked this year of all years, and shouldn't we be celebrating the periodic table all the time? Isn't it in use all of the time?
Exactly, it is. And to answer your first question first, who picked it? It's the United Nations that pick it.
Really?
Indeed, yes. Yeah, so not only is it the International Year of the Periodic Table, it's the International Year of a whole lot of things. And it is picked by the United Nations. So obviously,
how far in advance do they plan these things?
It's a good question, actually, because I didn't know about this until sort of early last year, I think. So you'd think it'd have to be a few years in advance.
And what is involved in the international,
well,
are there celebrations?
That's a really good question. They're going to have to be celebrations, aren't they? So if you go to the website IYPT2019.org, you can find out what is happening with the big celebrations for the periodic table this year.
And IYPT meaning International Year of the Periodic Table.
Indeed, indeed.
2019, 2019.
Or, well, you know, we don't say 2001 A Space, or we do say 2001 A Space Odyssey. We don't say 2001, do we?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See,
all
that's
right.
Where I'm coming from. Anyway, but that's digressing.
Different disciplines.
So why is it the International Year of the Periodic Table? Because it's 150 years since it was published.
So it is an anniversary celebration.
It is an anniversary celebration, yes.
Right.
And it came about through the work of lots of people who are sadly not remembered by history. And the person that gets all the credit for this is a guy by the name of Dmitry Mendeleev. And he was a Russian chemist who was busy beavering away trying to bring some order to all of the known elements. Okay.
Oh.
So, right, what's an element?
So there were, well, there were a range known already, and then he wanted to.
There were about 60 or so elements known at his time. And by an element, I mean a different type of atom, okay? Mm. Elements are made up of certain types of atoms. So hydrogen's an element, helium's an element, oxygen's an element, carbon dioxide's not an element, it's made up of elements,
mm-hmm.
carbon and oxygen, etc., etc. So any sort of pure, single material, okay, that's just made up of one type of atom
yep.
is an element.
Yep.
And so they had about 60 of these things known at the time. And there were people trying to put them into some sort of order because they're all sort of higgledy-piggledy and they didn't know how they could order all of these things. And there were a lot of people sort of trying to work this out. And Mendeleev gets all of the credit because he was the first to publish his, what they call, periodic table in 1869. And one of his competitors, a guy by the name of Lothar Meyer, sort of came up with his periodic table, which was very, very similar to Mendeleev's. But because Mendeleev published first, he gets all the credit. And
right.
And he gets his name on the actual periodic table itself, which is kind of cute, although he didn't win the Nobel Prize for it, which he should have, but that's another story.
But he gets name on it,
I suppose. He does get his name on it, yeah. Bit late for him, but you know. you might think, okay, whoopty shit, putting things in order.
Well, I'm curious to know how they did that.
Okay, so they did it by looking at the chemical properties of these different elements. And what they found was that certain elements behaved similarly, okay? And should we shut that door?
You keep
okay,
telling
I'll
us
keep,
about...
I'll keep
yeah.
talking and yeah. you go and shut the door because it's a bit noisy out there. Okay, so Mendeleev found that certain elements behaved chemically similarly. So three elements, for example, lithium, sodium, and potassium. And anybody who knows anything about those will know that they are all metals. They're all fairly light. If you put them in water, they react with water very, very vigorously. They've got very, very, very similar chemical properties. And so he thought that they must be sort of related somehow. And so he sort of put them into a row by themselves. He's right, these guys behave similarly. We'll put them in a row. And
mm-hmm.
then he looked at all the other elements and sort of figured out which ones behave similarly. And put them in rows. And but his genius, his absolute genius, came at the point where he thought there was a missing element. Okay, so let's say he had two that behave similarly, and there should be one in the middle.
Mm.
And he left gaps in his periodic table, and he said, "Oh, okay, this element hasn't been discovered yet."
Wow, that is forward thinking.
And 10 years or so later, these elements that he predicted were in fact discovered, and that's freaking genius.
And so they were just able to slot them in because of those gaps.
Yep. And they knew what they were looking for too, because he could predict what properties they should have, whether they're going to be metals or non-metals, and what their boiling points and densities, all that sort of stuff, are going to be. He could figure out just on the basis of his periodic table. So it really, truly, truly was a work of genius.
Mm, that does sound brilliant.
So, you know, let's celebrate that this year. If I may plug for a different radio station.
Of course, yes.
If you keep an ear out to National Radio, or sort of watch the National Radio podcast page this year, you might find yours truly possibly on there talking about each and every element.
So is this a specific year of the periodic table thing?
Yes.
So will you be talking about like a different element every week or something?
Sort of like two a week or something. We're hoping to get through them all.
Wow.
So,
that is cool.
So that will be fun, hopefully. So I shall let you know when it's going to be.
If you have ones that are relevant to stories that you're bringing in here, feel free to, you know,
absolutely
talk to us about them as well.
Yep. No,
we could definitely. We could theme our Dear Science this year. This is cool though. All right, well, let's move on to the next story. Desalination.
Yes, indeed.
A problem which was occurring from a solution, right?
Indeed, it's a problem that sort of was designed to solve a problem, and now it's becoming a problem, I guess. So if you live in sort of North Africa or the Middle East or whatever, then water obviously is a problem. Fresh water, clean water, drinking water, whatever. Where does it come from? So it doesn't rain very much over there, not a lot of big rivers, so where do they get their water from? And you might be interested to know that Kuwait, for example, gets 100% of its water from desalination, which I didn't know. I think that's quite astonishing. So they are completely reliant on desalination, and by desalination I simply mean taking water from the ocean, from the sea, whatever, and taking the salt out of it. And there are various ways that you can do this. They're all fairly energy intensive. Obviously, you can't just sort of pick salt out of water very, very easily. But a lot of them now are sort of using solar power. So that's a very, very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that in most of them, they use this thing called a semi-permeable membrane.
I remember that from high school.
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm. Okay, in which case you probably remember a thing called osmosis.
Yes.
Ah, there we go. Okay, so osmosis occurs in the wrong way for desalination to happen. Okay, so osmosis is a spontaneous process where the water will sort of go from the less concentrated to the more concentrated or whichever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you push back against that osmotic pressure as it is, you can essentially push pure water out of salt water, okay? And you push it through this membrane, okay? So you've got to apply an equal or a slightly greater pressure than the mm-hmm. natural osmotic pressure, and so that is a really, really efficient way of doing this. However, what you get left with at the end of the day is on one side of the membrane pure water, and on the other side of the membrane much, much more concentrated salt solution.
Right.
Okay? Because you're taking the water out of the salty water and pushing it through the membrane into the pure water.
Yeah.
And so therefore you've got to get rid of that salt somehow. And that's the problem with desalination, and particularly in terms of the countries that rely on it, because 55%, I think, of desalination occurs in Saudi Arabia, UAE, Kuwait, and Qatar. Okay, so they all basically share a common border on the Persian Gulf, or I guess in Saudi Arabia's case, the Red Sea. And they have to get rid of this saline solution, this very, very concentrated saline solution somewhere. And so what they do is they just dump it back into the ocean.
Which would just be increasing the level of saline.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you're basically taking the water out of there in the first place.
Okay.
You're taking the salt out, and then you're dumping the salt back where it came from, okay?
But it's a higher concentration.
Right, exactly. That's the problem. It's a very, very concentrated salt solution. And what happens is that it's very, very dense as well. It's much more dense than normal seawater because it's got all that salt in it. And so it just goes straight to the bottom and it kills all of the wildlife that doesn't like the very, very high salinity. And this is a problem. And obviously one way around this problem, excuse me, would be to somehow mix the very, very highly salty water when you're putting it back into the sea or the ocean. Okay, so you want to really disperse it somehow. And I guess my thought is that obviously the Persian Gulf's not an ideal place to dump all of this stuff because it's going to be comparatively not very deep. Okay, there's not a truckload of water in it. Maybe ship it out through the Straits of Hormuz and dump it in the Atlantic or something like that. And then it wouldn't be a problem because it would have plenty of time to disperse as it drops down
right.
through the much, much deeper waters.
Would it become a problem later?
Not necessarily.
Or it's just it's simply because about the time it takes to...
Yeah, it's simply about the time right. it takes to disperse. So you're not actually making the ocean any saltier, okay? All you do is putting, all you're doing is putting the salt that was in there in the first place back in there, but in a much more concentrated form. Mm. And that seems to be the problem they can't get their head around. So they've just published a paper last week in a journal called Science of the Total Environment where they are looking at this problem. And they have found, what they have found, the original thought was that for every litre of pure water that you get out from the desalination plant, you're going to be dumping a litre of the saline solution. They've now found that that ratio is about 1 to 1.5. So for every litre of pure water you get out,
more
you've got to get
solution.
Rid of 1.5
wow.
litres of the saline. So okay. it's a problem, and it was always going to be a problem, and maybe people, I guess, need to think this through a little bit better. They've also got lots of desalination plants in Australia, and I think they're probably not so affected because they've got a lot of deep water sort of straight off their coast. So,
but could be a problem in the future.
Indeed. So, you know, people just need to think about where they're dumping this stuff and the possible problems that occur with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last story for the day. Memory. How do we remember things better, Alan?
Oh, geez, I wish I knew. I can get introduced to somebody and 5 minutes and 5 seconds later I've forgotten their name. I've
right.
just a terrible memory for names and stuff like that. I can tell you all about the bloody periodic table, but oh, jeez. So it's, again, a paper that was published last week in a journal called Experimental Aging Research from a group of workers at the University of Waterloo in Canada. And
there's a journal called Experimental Aging Research.
Okay. Experimental Aging Research, yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And so what they have shown is that if you want to remember something, draw it or draw a representation of it. Okay, so what they did was they did a study and they had 48 participants and half of them were aged around 20 or so and half of them were aged around 80.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they were given a list of words and they were asked to do one of three things with these words. So they're either asked to write the word down, write some sort of physical description that that word sort of engenders, or draw a representation of what that particular word means.
Right. So okay. draw implies a picture, though?
Yes, a picture. Yes. Yep. So physically draw a picture.
What if you're no good at drawing?
Doesn't matter. I mean, everyone's each to their own, I guess. You'll recognise what you are drawing yourself.
Right. It's your own interpretation anyway.
Yeah. So you had three options with that. And then they took the list of words away and then short break. And then you had to try and recall as many words as possible.
Without the pictures, though.
Yeah. So what they found, not surprisingly, is that the 20-year-olds had better recall than the 80-year-olds, so probably no surprises there. But what they found that in both groups, that the words that they had drawn pictures of or representations of were remembered much better than the other two, than just writing down the word or writing down some description of the word. So it's actually physically the whole drawing thing seems to... Yeah,
that's cool. I always got told that you should, if you want to remember a joke, say it three times or something.
Yeah.
And then you'll remember it forever.
Yeah.
I've attempted that.
I wish that was the case too, because I can't remember
the
funny jokes. Yeah, me too. I know.
But drawing it, how would you draw a joke though? You draw a series of pictures, like a storyboard or something. This is time consuming, Alan.
You can't go around with a
pad at a party saying, what was your name? Okay, let me just draw this.
No, I totally agree with that. But you know, this is I guess a start into sort of figuring out how we remember and what the best way of remembering is.
Mind you, soon enough we'll probably have iPads in our brains and
very probably
our brain can just draw it and then it will be there forever.
The explanation of this was the fact that when you're drawing something, you're using more areas of your brain And so you're implanting a memory in more areas of your brain
than
you are if you're just sort of writing things down. And so therefore, that supposedly makes things easier to recall.
So studying, should people be drawing pictures?
Everyone's got to find, this is what I always tell my students, everyone's got to find out the best way that they study. So some people can read something and they've got, you know, instant recall, you know, photographic memory, all that sort of stuff. Other people, myself, I've got to write it down and then write it down write it down. You know, that's the way I do it. You make it smaller and smaller and smaller each time until you get down to the, you know, the bare basics. Mm. But what they are looking for is that this could be used in patients with dementia, for example. So if, you know, if you've got early onset Alzheimer's or something like that,
right,
teaching them to draw might be a very, very good way of teaching them to remember. Mm. So
so there will be more research on that?
Oh, yeah. No, I'd say, you know, definitely. So
brilliant.
Yeah,
all right. Well, thank you, Alan. It's great to have you back in studio.
It is fantastic to be back, Lillian.
Looking forward to this year, the periodic year.
Absolutely. Yes.
Very exciting. So. All right. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Will do.
Okay.
Okay. See ya.
That was Dear Science.